Hi, everybody. I'm Carl Darden, and I'd like to welcome and thank all of you for joining us today on Navy Sports Central. I'm your host, and this is the official podcast of the Navy Sports Nation, where we take a deeper dive into Navy sports. We're really glad you're here, because this podcast was created especially for you. In this first episode, we're going to get you all familiar with our new podcast format. Then we're going to do a quick update on the winter and spring sports seasons. And finally, we're going to take a look at how two of Navy's newest coaches have done in their first year leading their respective teams. We've got a lot to cover, so let's jump right in. Before we get rolling, I'd like to give a shout out to all of my classmates and the rest of the Navy Sports Nation for your support over the past year. It's been really great reading all your comments on the blog and also on our group Facebook page. And this podcast will be just another extension of that blog and another way for you guys to get your Navy sports content. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, so let me just go ahead and run down the format for you just so you know what to expect. It's really pretty straightforward. Obviously, we're going to be covering all the Navy sports news, particularly of the seasonal sports that are going on at the time. And then we're going to have a main feature, which may or may not be an interview. It just kind of depends on what's going on. Another thing we're going to do related to that feature is have some sort of question or survey where you guys can either call into a Google voicemail number or reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts and comments. And I'll get into those details a little bit later. And finally, we're going to have a segment called Midwatch. This is something I mentioned in the blog post last month when I introduced the podcast. What we're going to do is select one male and one female athlete and follow their performance for the rest of the year. So towards the end of this episode, we're going to go ahead and identify them. Okay, that didn't take nearly as long as I thought, so we're going to go ahead and roll right into the next segment here, which is basically just an update on all the winter and spring sports. And I guess we can just start with the most painful one first, and that's men's basketball. That was a really, really tough way to end the season. The Mids were 15-3 overall and 12-1 in the Patriot League, and had snagged the number one seed going into the tournament. The only problem was, in their last two games against Loyola, we found out that the team had to play without Cam Davis and Richard Njoku due to COVID issues. Now, this was more of a contact tracing thing as opposed to a positive test, and the Mids did happen to win both of those games against the Greyhounds due to some really, really good bench play. I also figured that since the tournament didn't start until March 10th, that Davis and Njoku would be good to go by then, but they didn't play at all, and on top of that, John Carter Jr. was under the weather also. It wasn't COVID-related, but you could tell that he just wasn't his usual self, and he just wasn't a factor the entire game. Unfortunately, that pretty much did it for the Mids. You're talking about your top two scorers in Davis and John Carter Jr., and then your top defender in Njoku all out of the game, or at least not 100%. Now, give Loyola credit. They came out strong and played with a lot of energy, and they did everything they needed to do to hold off the Mids all the way till the final buzzer. And that provided a great momentum boost for them, because then they came out and they won their semifinal game against Army and gave Colgate all they could handle in the Patriot League final before finally losing on Selection Sunday. So a really tough way for the Mids to finish up their season, but on the bright side, they have a really, really experienced team coming back. Obviously, Cam Davis is lost to graduation, so they're going to have to find a way to replace his production, but they may not need to look very far. They have John Carter Jr. coming back in addition to Greg Summers, who's the number three scorer, and also Richard Njoku. We've already talked about his defensive skills, but he's been improving every single game as an offensive threat. So by the time next season rolls around, he's going to be even stronger. And then you start getting into some of these players who made really big contributions off the bench this past season. Austin Inge, who's going to be a sophomore next year, he was just a lights-out defender in the backcourt, came up with at least one steal a game. Patrick Dorsey's a great all-around player who does all the little things well. And then you have Tyler Nelson, Jalen Walker, and Daniel Deaver, who is a really good passer out of the high and low post. So Coach Ed DeChalice has got a lot to work with next year, and I think the Mids are going to be a contender for the Patriot League championship again. Okay, that does it for men's basketball, and I'm going to hold off on the women's basketball and also wrestling, because we're going to go into a little bit more detail there on our deep dive, and that'll be coming up later. So we're going to move on with swimming and diving, both the women and the men. We'll start with the women first. They just completed the NCAA championships this past weekend down in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the Mids had four qualifiers there, two swimmers and two divers. The swimmers were Sydney Harrington and Martina Thomas. Harrington qualified in the 100 and 200 butterfly, and Thomas in the 200 and 500 freestyle. The divers were Hannah Montau and Megan Gerdes, and they both qualified in the 3-meter springboard and the 10-meter platform events. Harrington placed 18th overall in the 100 butterfly. And in the 200 butterfly the next day, she placed eighth in the consolation final, which was good enough for honorable mention All-America honors. And by the way, Harrington owns the 9 best times in school history in both of those events. Thomas made it through the qualifying rounds of the 200 freestyle and ended up finishing 20th overall. And both Harrington and Thomas are juniors, so they'll be back next year and looking to get back to the NCAA championships again. In the diving competition, Hannah Montauf finished 42nd in both the 3-meter springboard and 10-meter platform, and Megan Gerdes finished 30th in the 3-meter event while coming in 37th in the 10-meter platform. And by the way, I don't know how those divers do it. I can't remember from my time at the academy if they were just able to validate the tower jump, but if not, they must have just thought it was a complete joke. For those of you who don't know, at the academy, we had to take swimming every year, and one of the requirements for graduation was the 10-meter tower jump. I think they gave us a crack at it basically every year, but we actually had to do it for the grade our senior year. And we also had to do a 40-minute swim as well, sometimes called a 40-year swim. But I can tell you one thing. I would rather do 10 tower jumps than spend 40 minutes in the water again when I look back on it. Like I said, I can't remember if the divers did validate it automatically just because that's what they did. But I actually think it would have been kind of cool to see them do one of their dives. The thinking there being, man, if this person can do a 1.5 somersault from the pike position, I can certainly jump off the platform feet first. And while I'm thinking about it, here's a question for all of you guys, not just the academy folks. What would you rather do? Swim for 40 minutes or jump off the 10-meter tower? And I'll go over how you all can respond to that question a little bit later when we talk about our question of the day. I can't wait to hear some of these answers, as well as some of the funny stories that might go along with them. Okay, got a little bit off topic there. Let's go ahead and finish up the updates here for swimming. The women did have a chance to compete in some dual meets. They finished with a 3-1 record. Unfortunately, the dual meet against Army was canceled this year due to COVID issues up at West Point. The Mids would have been going for their 32nd straight win there. Okay, now on to men's swimming. The NCAA championships are actually going on as we speak, and I'll have an update on those either on our Navy Sports Nation Facebook page, and I'll also add an update on our next podcast as well. But like the women, they finished 3-1 in their dual meets, and the one against Army was canceled. And by the way, currently that winning streak for the men stands at 29 in a row. The men did send 3 swimmers and 2 divers to the NCAA championships. Caleb Malden qualified in the 100 backstroke, Garrett McGovern in the 500 and 1650-yard freestyle, and Luke Johnson qualified in the 500 and the 600 and the 1650 free as well. Our divers are Patrick Johnson and Jason Hedrick, and they'll compete in both the springboard and platform events. And by the way, it's worth noting here that they are still planning on having the Patriot League championships. They're just going to be held next month. Due to all the schedule changes and so forth, they decided to go ahead and make sure we got the NCAA championships in, and then they would just pick up with the league championships next month. Okay, let's go ahead and get through the rest of these updates here so that we can keep moving. Let's move on to track. Both the men's and women's track team won their star meets against Army and to conclude the indoor season. Outdoor season should be getting going here pretty soon after this restriction of movement order is lifted. Both lacrosse teams got off to a very good start. They are both, actually the men are 2-0, the women are 3-0. The women actually crushed George Washington 22-2 right before things got shut down here briefly. Baseball is 4-0, and they actually have an 18-game winning streak dating back to last season. Their last win was a 3-2 win over George Mason, and I believe that winning streak is the longest in the country right now. And then finally, tennis. Both the men and women are also 2-0. The men's last win came over Delaware, and the women defeated Towson. So that's how the spring sports look right now, and we'll continue to update these when things get cranked up again. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll jump into our deep dive segment. By the way, if you're not following the Navy Sports Nation on Facebook, you can do that by jumping on and typing in Navy Sports Nation in the search bar and it'll come up. It's not a private group or anything like that, so feel free to join us. And it's just a good way to keep track of what's going on in Navy sports day to day. Now it's time for today's deep dive, and I think when we go back to last year, particularly the second week in March, most sports fans will remember it as the week that all collegiate sports came to a stop. And while that's true, I remember it for one other thing, and that's finding out that 2 Navy coaches would not be returning to lead their respective teams. So that's what I'd like to get into now. The two sports were women's basketball and wrestling. Let's start with women's basketball. On March 10th, it was announced that Stephanie Pemper would not be returning as Navy's coach. This actually caught me a little off guard because Pemper was Navy's winningest coach. She had been at the academy for 12 years and she'd compiled a record of 214 wins against 164 losses. But even more importantly, she was really responsible for turning that program around. Coach Pemper was hired in 2008, and in the previous 9 years, the Navy women's team had not had a single winning season in Patriot League play. And in just her third year, she led them to a league title. And during her 12 years at the academy, the Mids made three straight trips to the NCAA tournament. They also qualified for the women's NIT three times and had nine winning seasons in the Patriot League. Unfortunately, the program suffered a significant drop-off in 2019 and 2020. The Mids overall record during those 2 years was a combined 17-42, and that included 7-29 in Patriot League play. And then last season was really, really tough. They went 7-23 overall, were only 2-16 in Patriot League play, and they lost their last 11 games. So just a few days after American University beat the Mids in the Patriot League quarterfinals, Chet Gladchuk made the announcement that Coach Pemper would not be returning. So now he's got to start the coaching search. And keep in mind, when Gladchuk goes out looking for a coach, he's got to check more than just one box. Not only do they have to have a really good resume, but they have to buy into the academy's mission as well. And that's not always easy. I mean, most coaches, especially the really good ones, are notorious for being control freaks. And let's face it, at some point, if you're a Naval Academy coach, you've got to be willing to give up some of that control. And the coaches who figure out a way to do that early usually do okay. The ones who don't tend to really struggle. So with that in mind, the Navy AD went looking. And he found his man about 300 miles down the road in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. His name was Tim Taylor, and he was pretty well known across women's basketball. Coach Taylor started out as an assistant at Furman University in 1998, and after 2 years moved on to take a spot as an assistant coach with the University of Virginia. So there he worked for legendary coach Debbie Ryan, and that's where he developed a reputation as a first-rate recruiter. He brought in multiple top 15 recruiting classes while he was in Charlottesville. And then when he moved down to Chapel Hill, he brought in a class that was ranked 11th in the country. Just to give you an idea of how well-respected Coach Taylor was across the women's basketball landscape, I'm going to read to you a quote by Coach Ryan after Taylor was hired at Navy. So bear with me here. It's a little bit long, but it's definitely worth hearing. She says, "The Naval Academy hit this one out of the park with the selection of Tim Taylor to lead their women's basketball program. Tim is an exceptional coach who excels as a tactician, fundamental teacher of the game, and develops players well beyond what seems possible for each individual. Tim, more importantly, is an outstanding human being who will develop the women to be great teammates, servant leaders, and people who will represent the mission of the Naval Academy on its highest level. He has a passion for people, and he understands the culture of a successful team. He'll mold his young women into a cohesive, united group who can overcome any obstacle through hard work and sacrifice to achieve team goals. The Academy could not have found a better person for the job, and the women's basketball program will be very grateful for his selection." So there's two things that struck me about Coach Ryan's statement, and it's when she spoke about Coach Taylor's ability to not only teach the game, but also develop his players. Specifically, she said that Coach Taylor was really good at developing players well beyond what was thought to be their potential. And at the Naval Academy, this is a skill that's becoming more and more important, especially when you consider how competitive things are now with respect to recruiting.
The other thing that made Coach Taylor a great fit had to do with what he was looking for, and that was having an impact beyond basketball. Prior to the beginning of the season, he was interviewed by Navy Sports and was asked what really attracted him to the Navy position. And he basically said it came down to one thing, and that is, beyond basketball, what are you selling? And that's a quote from him. So it was clear that he was looking to make an impact beyond the court, and the chance to influence and shape the lives of future military leaders was just too much to pass up. So that pretty much gives you the backstory. Taylor was hired on April the 28th, and he spends the next 6 months putting his staff together and meeting his players, and all this is going on in the middle of a pandemic. As far as Coach Taylor's coaching style, he was a big believer in playing up-tempo basketball as well as tough, aggressive defense. Active hands, active feet, anything you can do to disrupt the opponent's offense. So the team spent the preseason getting that ingrained into them, recognizing that it wasn't going to happen overnight. They kicked off the season on November the 29th against George Mason, and it was a pretty good game. They did come up short, 72-68, but they were in the game right till the very end. Now, they went on to lose their next four games as well, but the thing was, they were only really out of one of them. That was against Richmond, where they lost by double digits. So really, it was just a matter of getting accustomed to finishing games out. I mean, think about the fact that they did lose their last 11 games the previous year. So it kind of takes a little bit of time to learn to win again, basically. And the other thing worth considering is that Coach Taylor was busy experimenting with different lineups just to kind of see which players worked best together, because the whole idea was to build team chemistry not only with the starting rotation, but also with the players coming off the bench. The Mids finally broke through and won their first game on January 17th against American. Just the day before, they had lost to the Eagles by a score of 61-52, and the back-to-back games were due to the modified Patriot League schedule due to the pandemic. In any case, the team came through with a 70-67 win, and that was highlighted by Colby Green's 25 points, and her backcourt mate Jennifer Coleman chipped in with 17. The two of them had to be exhausted by the time the game was over. Green played all 40 minutes, and Coleman was right behind her with 39. The team followed that up with a big win over Army, 63-49 up at West Point. Jennifer Coleman led the way there with 21 points and 14 rebounds, and senior captain Sophie Gatsunas came through with 16 points. The Mids couldn't complete the sweep the following day, but the fact is they did go 5-3 in the conference, and they actually had a chance to win their division, but unfortunately they lost their final game of the season. And that pretty much did it for them because COVID issues prevented them from competing in the Patriot League tournament. I mean, the timing is really awful here. The Mids had won 3 straight games, but the COVID issues just wouldn't go away. After a week break, they came back, and that was a game they lost against American that basically cost them a chance at the division. They did have a chance to come back because there's 2 more games remaining on the schedule against Loyola, but the COVID protocols basically eliminated any chance of them competing in the tournament after those Loyola games were canceled. So when you take everything into consideration, this team definitely exceeded expectations in my book. They did finish 5-7, but just check out how the games played out. I mean, they lost their first 5 games of the year. They were in basically every one of them except for one against Richmond that I'd mentioned before. And then they ended up winning 5 of their last 7 games. So to get off to that kind of start and then have a chance to win a division, that's pretty remarkable as far as I'm concerned. And it's a testament to Coach Taylor and his staff, especially when you consider where the team started. So things are looking really good for next year. I mean, they are losing Sophie Gatsunas to graduation, and she was their leading 3-point scorer. But think about this for a second. They have Colby Green and Jennifer Coleman coming back, and that's going to be one dynamic backcourt for sure. The other thing is the team has really bought into that up-tempo style of play, and with another year to get comfortable under Coach Taylor's system, I think the Mids can definitely get themselves in a position to compete for a league title next year. So that's a look at Coach Tim Taylor's first season leading the Navy women's basketball team. Now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into Navy wrestling. While I'm thinking about it, if any of you out there have an idea for a segment that we can do on Navy Sports Central, please feel free to let me know, and you'll have all the information on how to do that before the podcast is over. Okay, welcome back to Navy Sports Central. My name is Carl Darden. Now we're going to go ahead and take a look at Navy wrestling and how it did under first-year coach Kerry Colot. So just to give you a little bit of a backstory, Navy wrestling has always been a really strong program over the years, and that's been primarily due to 2 legendary coaches. One of them was Ed Perry, who led the team from 1961 to 1987. He had an overall record of 311 wins against 90 losses and 14 ties. And then later in the program, Bruce Burnett took over in 2001, and he had a dual record of 113-57 overall. So, and by the way, Bruce Burnett was also a coach of the national team during the 2000s as well. So that kind of sets the stage for you. Now, after Bruce Burnett retired in 2013, Joel Sherratt took over the program. He had actually been an assistant under Burnett in the mid-2000s, and then he went on to coach at Air Force, and he really got that program turned around. So when Sherratt returned to Navy, it seemed like it was going to be business as usual. And when you look at the overall record during the 6 years that he was here, you'd have to agree. I mean, he went 43-24, and his best year was in 2017 when he led the Mids to a 10-3 record, and actually a really strong finish in the NCAA championships. They finished 22nd that year. And then in 2019, which turned out to be his final season, he sent 5 wrestlers to the NCAAs. But there's only one problem, and that had to do with the overall match record against Army. When you look at Coach Perry's record, for example, during the time he was at Navy, he went 22-2-3 against the Black Knights. Bruce Burnett was undefeated. He went 13-0. And what was even more impressive is those matches weren't even close. I mean, the average score was 25-8. When you look at Sherratt's record, it was 1-5. The first year out, he lost, and then they came back and won the following year, but then finished with 4 straight losses. And that's when Chet Gladchuk decided to go ahead and make a change. The program appeared to be stuck in a rut, and it seemed like while they weren't doing horribly, they just weren't getting any better. But the thing that stung the most is that their overall record against Army was 49-10-5. And half of those losses had come in the last 6 years, so that was just not good. So on March 13th, Gladchuk made the announcement that Coach Surratt would not be returning and that he would be starting a search for a new coach. And a week later, he hired Kerry Collott, who was the head coach at Campbell University. So when I read the Navy Sports press release and Chet Gladchuk's remarks, you could just feel the enthusiasm coming through. Coach Collott was a 2-time NCAA champion and a member of the U.S. national team. He's also a 3-time World Cup gold medalist and competed in the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, Australia. Coach Collott was hired at Campbell University in 2015 after serving as an associate coach at University of North Carolina for the previous 4 years. And I'll tell you what, he got that program turned around in no time at Campbell. Prior to his arrival, if you look at the 5 previous years, Campbell's overall record in dual meets was 28-63. And then in just 3 years, Collott had them as conference champions, and then they went on to win 3 out of 4 championships overall. I think it was a lot more than that that led Gladchuk to hire Collott, though. More than anything else, I believe it was his intensity that was the real difference maker. I mean, you listen to the coach speak, and there's just a certain energy there, a real focus. And I think Gladchuk felt that that's what the team needed because the program seemed to be missing some of that intensity over the last few years. Because of the pandemic, the team only had about a month to do some real hands-on wrestling prior to the start of the season. But they did make the most of that time, and you could tell almost immediately just based on the team's response. They knew Coach Collott's track record, and that was very motivating. I mean, they had a chance to learn from a very, very good tactician and former Olympian, and it just doesn't get any better than that. There were members of the team commenting on how much more fun the practices were, and that really speaks to the rut that the team was in prior to Coach Collott's arrival. So then I started asking myself, man, what's this guy's superpower? And after doing a little bit more research on YouTube, I think I figured it out. And by the way, Coach Collott has over 171,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel, so if that doesn't tell you a little bit about his influence, I don't know what does. In any case, I think that it's mental toughness that separates him from everybody else. And he knows how to communicate that to his wrestlers, which is even more important. On one of his YouTube clips where he talks about his coaching philosophy, he shares a story about when he went down with the junior national team to Cuba. I believe it was in 2015 or so, and it's a really good one. He talked about walking into one of their gyms and just looking at the overall condition. It was really, really dirty. I mean, rusty barbells, rusty weights, a couple of pull-up bars, and some old mats. And he made a point of saying that the Cubans don't let this stand in their way. I mean, they always have a top internationally ranked team year in and year out. And Coach Collott shared that the reason for this is because the Cubans don't have this, I need this to succeed mentality. They just use what they have, and they just work their tail off with no excuses. So I think what he's been most successful doing in his first year at the academy is just instilling this type of mental toughness into his wrestlers. And the results were pretty apparent the very first season. They nearly upset Pitt. I mean, they had them on the ropes. Pitt was 14th ranked. And if the Mids had taken, you know, 2 out of the last 4 matches, they probably would have come away with that one. But then they didn't let that slow them down. They defeated perennial league champion Lehigh for the first time in about 10 years, and it wasn't really that close either. The score was 21-9. They followed that up with 2 consecutive shutouts against Cleveland State and George Mason, and the combined score there was 81-0. But the biggest win was the one over Army, which broke that 4-match losing streak. It was expected to be pretty close, and it was. The two teams split the first 4 matches, and then John Birchmeyer scored a crucial win in the heavyweight division to give Navy some momentum. But it was still really close going into the very last match. The score was 16-13, and Andrew Seniglia took the mat to look to secure that star, and he did it in dominating fashion, defeating his opponent 14-3. The Mids went on to finish 2nd in the EIWA championships overall, and Cody Tribus won his 2nd straight title at 141 pounds. And finally, Navy sent 9 wrestlers to the NCAA championships. That's their highest number in over 50 years. So without a doubt, Kerry Collott has been a terrific coaching hire. I mean, he's inspiring, and he knows how to get the most out of his wrestlers. And here's just a quick story to illustrate that point. David Key was seeded 20th in the NCAA tournament at 184 pounds. And on top of that, he was a freshman. I mean, there's no doubt that he'd wrestled big matches in the past, but after all, this was his first NCAA tournament. So he's going into the 3rd round of his first match, and he's behind 8-4. And I don't know what Coach Kolat said to him between the second and third periods. They don't get a whole lot of time to talk. But the next thing you know, Key ended up pinning his opponent with just over a minute to go in the match. The Mids ended up finishing 32nd out of 63 teams in Kolat's first season. That's their best finish in 5 years. So look for Navy Wrestling to make a whole lot more noise in the future with Coach Kolat leading them. That's going to do it for our deep dive segment. We'll be back shortly with our Navy Sports Central question of the day. All right, we are back, and now it's time for you guys to share your thoughts by answering our Navy Sports Central question of the day. And this is the way you would answer the question that I'd posed to you guys earlier around the tower jump and the 40-minute swim. Okay, so we've got two ways for you guys to respond. The first is by calling into a Google voicemail number. It's 623-282-4896. Again, that's 623-282-4896. And you can call in and just leave a message there. You can also reach me on Twitter through a direct message, and that's going to be at Navy Sports Central. Again, that's at Navy Sports Central, NavSportsCentrl. That's basically Central without the A. And I had to do that because the limitation on the number of characters for a Twitter handle. Sorry about that. Okay, so here's our question. What was your most favorite moment in Navy women's basketball and or Navy wrestling? So you can answer to either one or both. And please be specific. I mean, I don't want to just hear, oh, well, when they beat Army, you know, that I need a little bit more than that, okay? So here's an example for you. For me, in Navy women's basketball, it was their very first win of the season over American University. In that particular game, Colby Green scored 25 points. That was a career high for her, and she hit several clutch free throws down the stretch to seal the win. But the best part was seeing the celebration in the locker room after the game. It was Coach Taylor's first win, obviously, and you could really see how much the team wanted it for him. I mean, they're going crazy in there just like they'd won the conference championship or something. So that was really neat to see. As far as Navy wrestling, I would have to say seeing freshman Andrew Cerniglia just dominate his opponent 14-3 in that final match against Army to win the star meet. Overall, the Mids took it 20-13. And it's some people thought it was a little bit iffy putting a freshman in with the star match on the line. But Cerniglia is a wrestler from Pennsylvania. He knows how to perform in the big moments, and he really got the job done. So Navy took home that star for the first time in 5 years. So maybe it doesn't have to be that detailed, but, you know, give me something I can work with, okay? Again, that's 623-282-4896 on the Google voicemail number, or you can message me on Twitter at Navy Sports Central. Just check the show notes for the spelling on the Twitter handle there. I will go through all the responses and either read or play a couple of them on our next episode. And before we move on, I just wanted to point out that you didn't necessarily have to have seen the event to give me an answer. You could have read about it in the newspaper. You could have read about it in the blog. Who knows? But I just wanted to let you know that you didn't actually have to witness it. So that is our question of the day. I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys. And we will be back shortly with our Midwatch segment. Okay, now we're into the segment of the show that I call the Midwatch. And as I mentioned earlier, this is where we're going to select an athlete on the men's and women's side to follow for the rest of the spring season. So the two sports I decided to go with were baseball and women's lacrosse. So let's start with baseball. The guy we're going to be following is Charlie Connolly. He is a senior right-handed pitcher from Wayne, Pennsylvania, and he is a good one. Connolly goes 6'4", 230 pounds, and looks more like a linebacker than a baseball player. He's got that solid power pitcher's build. He throws in the low to mid-90s, and he's also got a good slider and changeup as well. Connolly got everybody's attention last year when he started putting up some really good numbers. He started 4 games, had a 1.04 ERA, and struck out 32 batters. So far this year, he's got a 2-0 record, an ERA of under 3, and opposing hitters are batting about .207 against him. Connolly looked really good this year in his second start against George Mason. He threw 5 innings of shutout ball, allowing only 3 hits while striking out 7. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do when things get cranked up again. Our mid-watch selection for the women is Nicole Victory. She is an attacker on the Navy women's lacrosse team. And really, how can you not go with her with a name like that? Victory is a senior from Issaquah, Washington, and she's currently the team leader in points, including 10 goals and 3 assists. She was also second on the team in assists when things came to a stop last season. The Navy women are 3-0 this year so far, and they are ranked in all 3 national polls. as high as 13th in the coaches' poll. I watched the first game of the year against George Mason, and it was played in absolutely miserable conditions. There was a lot of sleet and freezing rain, which made it almost impossible to keep the ball in the player's sticks. But Victory seemed to manage pretty well, because she had 4 goals to lead the team, and then she had an absolute bullet from about 8 yards out right at the end of the first half that I don't think the goalie even saw. So the women's lacrosse team is definitely a contender for the Patriot League Championship, and I think Nicole Victory is going to play a big role for them the rest of the year. All right, so those are our 2 Midwatch athletes. Every podcast, I'm going to give you an update on how Charlie Connolly and Nicole Victory are doing all the way through to the end of the season. That's going to do it for this edition of Navy Sports Central. Thank you all for joining us. And if you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us anywhere you get your podcast. Remember to get back to us on our Navy Sports Central question of the day. You can either call and leave a voicemail at 623-282-4896. Again, that's 623-282-4896. Or you can hit me up with a message on Twitter at Navy Sports Central, and you can check the show notes for the spelling on that Twitter handle. And just a quick reminder, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely my own and do not represent those of the U.S. Naval Academy or Navy Athletics. By the way, the music used in Navy Sports Central comes to you courtesy of Audio Jungle. This is a great website for purchasing the rights to use music from thousands of artists around the world, and those we feature in this podcast will be credited in the show notes. Talk to you soon, everybody. Until next time, my name is Carl Darden. Go Navy, beat Army.